Good morning.
Good morning.
Good to see you all today. Hope you had a good week.
Yes.
And are ready for another one. We're always ready for another one, right? Don't want those weeks to stop. Well, this may well be our last Sunday to focus specifically on Isaiah. So this is a momentous time. Last week, I invited you to share verses in Isaiah that had particularly been significant to you. And we looked at chapter 1, we looked at chapter 11, we looked at chapter 26, chapter 54, 42, 40, and 41. Now, some of those chapters have numerous verses in them that are truly outstanding. But just to remind you of the ones that have already been mentioned, I went through those so quickly you probably didn't even catch them. But we will not complain if you repeat something that we already have looked at. Now, before I invite you to participate in that, I'm going to take a quick look at another angle and perhaps steal some of your scriptures in the process, but my apologies. I happened to think, as I was studying, of Handel's Messiah and the numerous references in that particular work to Isaiah. I say references, the actual use of Isaiah to provide the lyrics for that piece. Have you all had the privilege of hearing Handel's Messiah? Everybody know what I'm talking about? Okay. When I was, college. It hit me in a particularly strong way. I was listening to a recording on a record, an LP, of the Messiah. It was actually several LPs long because you could only get about 30 minutes on an LP. That's long play, 33 and a third RPMs. Anyway, and one Christmas, I coerced my whole family into sitting down and listening to the whole thing on LP. I had checked it out from, I believe, the library in Carbondale. I think they had it available, and that particular rendition was remarkable. Anyway, it's a couple hours long if you listen to all of it, but if it's done well, it is absolutely awesome. Now, something that you perhaps didn't know about the work, I certainly didn't know it, was that the verses, the collation of verses that comprise the lyrics were actually not done by Handel. A man by the name of Charles Jennens compiled the sequence of verses, sent them to Handel, and the very next month Handel composed the Messiah. So I think Charlie ought to have some credit there because putting those all together in that way was remarkable. And so out of 54 movements, I believe, 17 of them are from Isaiah. And I have here the movement and the verse to start us off with this morning to take a look at some of the truly outstanding passages. Now, the Messiah concentrates on certain chapters in particular. There are numerous uses of verses from chapter 40 and from chapter 53, and then a smattering of verses from other places. So to start with, movement 2 is taken from Isaiah chapter 40, verses 1 through 3. Comfort ye, my people, saith your God. And if you've heard this a lot, you can hear the music right in your head. Speak ye comfortably to Jerusalem, and cry unto her that her warfare is accomplished, that her iniquity is pardoned. The voice of him that crieth in the wilderness, prepare ye the way of the Lord, make straight in the desert a highway for our God. And of course, that passage not only brings back thoughts of the Messiah, it also directs our mind to the New Testament, where John the Baptist says, this is what I have been called to do, prepare the way of the Lord. Movement number three comes from Isaiah chapter 40, verse 4. Every valley shall be exalted, every mountain and hill made low, the crooked straight, and the rough places plain. So this is a verse which, out of context, is like, okay, we're really rearranging the landscape, aren't we? But the point here is to prepare a way for the Lord. There shall be no obstructions, nothing that will get in the way. And I've covered 2,845 miles of the United States this week. And there's some places that really would benefit from having the valleys exalted and the mountains made low, because you have to go way out of your way to get where you're going. And by the way, have you ever noticed how many times you're driving along and all of a sudden the road, it jogs over for a while and then it jogs back. And it's like, why didn't they just make that straight? Right? I'm sure there's a story behind it usually, but anyway, it's a bother if you're wanting to make good time. You have to do those curves. Isaiah 40. Movement number four from Isaiah verse five is from Isaiah 40 verse 5. And the glory of the Lord shall be revealed, and all flesh shall see it together, for the mouth of the Lord hath spoken it. And of course, that expression, all flesh, might not have much singularity to it, except we know that one of the big issues that became a pivotal part of Christianity is that the salvation that God had planned through Jesus Christ was to all flesh, not just the Jews, not just the physical descendants of Abraham. So that's an expression which has hopefully added meaning in our minds whenever we see it. Movement five, I'm sorry, eight of the Messiah comes from Isaiah 7, verse 14. Behold, the virgin shall conceive and bear a son, shall call his name Emmanuel, which means God with us. Movement 9 comes from Isaiah 40, verse 9. O thou that tellest good tidings to Zion, get thee up into the high mountain. O thou that tellest good tidings to Jerusalem, lift up thy voice with strength. Lift it up, be not afraid. Say unto the cities of Judah, behold your God. And it's hard to read that without the same phrasing from the musical piece. So one thing I think that we have mentioned about Hebrew poetry is that while it doesn't rhyme, certainly in English, and it didn't rhyme in Hebrew as well, or either, one of the telltale signs of it is the repetition of concepts in another form. So in this verse we have, O thou that tellest good tidings to Zion, and then O thou that tellest good tidings to Jerusalem. Those are basically synonymous. They're not different places. But that form of writing is typical of Hebrew poetry. And you find it a lot in the Psalms, of course, as well. There'll be things that you read, and then you read the next verse, and it's like, well, I just read something real like that, right? Well, that's poetry in Hebrew. The Messiah movement 10, it comes from Isaiah 60, verse 1. Arise, shine, for thy light is come, and the glory of the Lord is risen upon thee. Movement 11 comes from Isaiah 9:2. The people that walked in darkness have seen a great light, and they that dwell in the land of the shadow of the death, upon them hath the light shined. Movement 12, Isaiah 9:6. For unto us a child is born, unto us a son is given, and the government shall be upon his shoulder, and his name shall be called Wonderful, Counselor, the Mighty God, the Everlasting Father, the Prince of Peace. Movement 19 comes from Isaiah 35, verses 5 and 6. Then shall the eyes of the blind be opened, and the ears of the deaf unstopped. Then shall the lame man leap as an hart, and the tongue of the dumb shall sing. Movement 20 comes from Isaiah 40 again, verse 11. He shall feed his flock like a shepherd. He shall gather the lambs with his arm and carry them in his bosom and gently lead those that are with young. Movement 23 comes from Isaiah 53:3. He was despised and rejected of men, a man of sorrows and acquainted with grief. Another part of that movement comes from Isaiah 50, verse 6. He gave his back to the smiters and his cheeks to them that pluck off the hair. He hid not his face from shame and spitting. The next movement, movement 24, is based on Isaiah 53 as well, verses 4 and 5. Surely he hath borne our griefs and carried our sorrows. He was wounded for our transgressions. He was bruised for our iniquities. The chastisement of our peace was upon him. And then the next movement, also a part of verse 5 of Isaiah 53, and with his stripes we are healed. Movement 26, the next verse in Isaiah 53, all we like sheep have gone astray. We have turned everyone to his own way, and the Lord hath laid on him the iniquity of us all. Movement 31 comes from Isaiah 53, verse 8. He was cut off out of the land of the living. For the transgression of thy people was he stricken. Movement 38 comes from Isaiah 52, verse 7. How beautiful are the feet of them that preach the gospel of peace and bring glad tidings of good things. I think my dad probably used this passage more than once to try to entice us to rub his feet. Anyway, those are the passages from Isaiah which show up as lyrics in Handel's Messiah. But I say 17 different movements. So those may have been verses that stood out to you as well. But there are a lot of other verses in Isaiah which are truly outstanding. And are there any on your mind this morning that you'd like to share with us or have us review? I should have gone on Marco Polo this morning and reminded everybody, or just yesterday, that we were still doing this. Okay, that's one I had noted as well. Isaiah 58, starting with verse 6. Is not this the fast that I have chosen? To loose the bands of wickedness, to undo the heavy burdens, to let the oppressed go free, that ye break every yoke. Is it not to deal thy bread to the hungry, and that thou bring the poor that are cast out to thy house? When thou seest the naked, that thou cover him, and that thou hide not thyself from thine own flesh. Then shall thy light break forth as the morning, and thine health shall spring forth speedily, and thy righteousness shall go forth, or shall go before thee. The glory of the Lord shall be thy rear reward, that is, shall bring up the rear and rear guard, yes. That's what I remember that to mean. Let me just double check.
That's my translation.
Other translation.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Then shalt thou call, and the Lord shall answer. Thou shalt cry, and he shall say, Here I am. If thou take away from the midst of thee the yoke, the putting forth of the finger, and speaking vanity. And if thou draw out thy soul to the hungry, and satisfy the afflicted soul, then shall thy light rise in obscurity, and thy darkness shall be as noonday. And the Lord shall guide thee continually, and satisfy thy soul in drought, and make fat thine bones. And thou shalt be like a watered garden, like a spring of water, whose waters fail not. And they that shall be of thee shall build the old waste places. Thou shalt rise up the foundations of many generations. And thou shalt be called the repairer of the breach, the restorer of paths to dwell in. So what a beautiful expression of what it is that God wants to see from us in the way of a fast. Not just a ritual, not something which is done to try to manipulate him, but something ultimately that's done for the good of the needy around us. Yes, thank you.
This one of those kind of verses that people refer to as the promise, and I guess just wonder about, who is he talking to, and who is he saying this is what's going to happen. And, I don't borrow as a promise to me,
mm-hmm.
something that is, and yet it's kind of one of those principles that if we follow him, things do go better, generally.
Yes.
Not always. Well, they always go better than they would if we didn't follow him.
Yes.
But anyway, I don't know.
Okay, well, I think we've sort of developed an understanding that allows us to connect to a lot of these things which are, they are said to Israel, but we realize that Isaiah is speaking to the ideal Israel here, the idealized. Because at the same time, he condemns the Israel which is just that of blood because of their rebellion, because of their stiff-necked approach to life, because of their failure to follow him. The promises are to the chosen Israel. And we have come to realize that we can participate in that chosenness by identifying with Christ. And where identified doesn't mean that I wake up one morning and imagine that I'm that way, but I connect and embrace specifically with him through faith in his life and his choices and his example. So that kind of identify. So I appreciate, you know, I share that concern that we not take an obscure passage which is addressed specifically to somebody and say, oh, that's mine. But we've seen Isaiah do this. We see then in the New Testament the early Christians identified with these verses as well. They connected. They saw them as being said to them. So I think we have some bases there. If we participate in the chosenness that God has delineated as being associated with Christ, He is the chosen one, and we can participate in that through Him. Anybody else have an Isaiah passage you'd like to share with us this morning or remind us of?
Chapter 30, 15 through 19. Or that portion has spit out to me.
Sure. Isaiah chapter 30, verse 15, you say?
15. Mm-hmm.
Through 19. For thus saith the Lord God, the Holy One of Israel, in returning and rest shall you be saved. In quietness and in confidence shall be your strength, and you would not. But you said, no, for we flee upon horses. Therefore shall ye flee, and we ride upon the swift. Therefore they that pursue you be swift. 1,000 shall flee at the rebuke of one. At the rebuke of five shall ye flee, till ye be left as a beacon upon the top of a mountain and as an ensign upon a hill. And therefore will the Lord wait, that he may be gracious unto you. Therefore will he be exalted, that he may have mercy upon you. For the Lord is a God of judgment. Blessed are all they that wait for him. For the people shall dwell in Zion at Jerusalem. Thou shalt weep no more. He will be very gracious unto thee at the voice of thy cry. When he shall hear it, he will answer thee. Yes, that's an important concept that Isaiah continually points to. Connected with trust, isn't it? You wait on God because you trust in Him. And some more interesting word images that He creates there on the negative side for those who do not wait. Okay. Anybody else?
Chapter 55.
Chapter
55. The whole chapter, but especially 9 through 13.
Okay. Yes, that chapter showed up on my register as well. Oops. Gotta be careful what you click on in life, in general. So the first part of that chapter, yes, a verse that comes to my mind from another song. Ho, everyone that thirsteth, come ye to the waters. He that hath no money, come buy and eat. Why do you spend money for things that don't give you sustenance? 55 is a chapter that my dad used to tell about how that when they were kids, they played church. And he said, I think he said Elmer always had to be the preacher, his brother. But anyway, they always used this chapter as a text for the sermon. Seek ye the Lord while he may be found. Verse 6, call ye upon him while he is near. Let the wicked forsake his way, and the unrighteous man his thoughts. Let him return unto the Lord, and he will have mercy upon him, and to our God, for he will abundantly pardon. And you know, that's not a bad text for a basic sermon about salvation, right? There it is, right there. And then Rochelle illuminates these following verses in her mind, and I think they are worth doing that with. For as my thoughts are not your thoughts, neither are your ways my ways, saith the Lord. For as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts. For as the rain cometh down, and the snow from heaven, and returneth not thither, but watereth the earth, and maketh it bring forth, and bud, that it may give seed to the sower, and bread to the eater, so shall my word be that goeth forth out of my mouth. It shall not return unto me void, but it shall accomplish that which I please, and it shall prosper in the thing whereto I sent it. For you shall go out with joy and be led forth with peace. The mountains and the hills shall break forth before you into singing, and all the trees of the field shall clap their hands. Instead of the thorn shall come up the fir tree. Instead of the briar shall come up the myrtle tree. And it shall be to the Lord for a name, for an everlasting sign that shall not be cut off. And I don't know about you, but I'd a whole lot rather have a fir tree or a myrtle tree than a briar or a thorn.
I have two verses that particularly stand out to me.
Okay.
First of all, Isaiah 1:18. Maybe somebody said this one already. I can't remember.
We briefly looked at chapter 1 in general last week, but that's no problem.
Just this, come now, let us reason together, just always strikes me as...
Yes.
Before I committed my life to Jesus, there was no reasoning. It was just, you know, the wind, that wind, this wind. You're not looking in your brain and thinking about why I'm doing what I'm doing. You're just doing what you want. Mm-hmm. And what a change when you... Look, come to the Lord to let him help you dig down into who you are and what you are. And then if this other one goes with it, I just want to...
Oh, but do all of 18, right?
What?
Read all of 18, though.
Okay, you can do that, yeah. You want me to go? You want me to
go ahead.
Come now, my version is the ESV.
Oh, we'll forgive that.
Okay, come now, let us reason together, says the Lord. Though your sins are like scarlet, they shall be as white as snow. Though they are red like crimson, they shall become like wool. Yeah. And the one that goes with that in my mind is in 11.
Chapter 11?
Chapter 11, the end of verse 10. His resting place shall be glorious.
Okay.
That's my best way.
And of course, the his refers to, in that day there shall be a root of Jesse, which shall stand for an ensign of the people, to it shall the Gentiles seek, and his rest shall be glorious. And in him we can experience that kind of rest, right? Okay, anybody else have one they would like to?
I've got one that may not have much spiritual significance, but... Mm-hmm.
The vile person shall no more be called liberal, nor the churl said to be bountiful.
My version is so much clearer.
Yes. So liberal in Isaiah is a positive thing. We've gotten our labels mixed up, don't we, in our day?
They don't know that.
They don't know that.
Plain as the fool will no more be called noble, nor the scoundrel said to be honorable.
Yeah, you can see why we stick by the King James.
Do you want the complete Jewish version?
Sure, while we're at it.
The mean person will no longer be called generous, or the miserly said to be noble, for the mean person was meanness, his heart planned people so that he could act honestly.
Okay. Yep. Very good. Anything else you would like to illuminate?
So chapter 57, 17 and 18.
57.
This isn't the only place, but I had that marked as a beautiful contrast.
For the iniquity of his covetousness was I wroth, and smote him. I hid me and was wroth, and he went on frowardly in the way of his heart. And of course, that verse is surrounded with incredible passages. I had noted verse 15, and throughout this section of Isaiah, there's this constant appeal to the grandeur of God and his elevated existence. And so verse 15 says, "For thus saith the high and lofty one that inhabiteth eternity, whose name is holy, I dwell in the high and holy place with him also that is of a contrite and humble spirit, to revive the spirit of the humble and to revive the heart of the contrite ones." And then as a part of this these following verses, one of which Matt has pointed out here, they really cause me to think about what all's behind this, and I'm not sure that I fully understand it. But he says here in verse 16, "For I will not contend forever, neither will I always be wroth, for the spirit should fail before me, and the souls which I have made. For, or because of, the iniquity of his covetousness was I wroth." Okay, and so if you strip away the bulkiness of that language. So covetousness is about desire, right? I want. And so while most people wouldn't consider themselves to be covetous, that's kind of a label of extremity, everybody wants stuff. And at the heart of our going away from God is that passion, that want. And so the iniquity, or in the New Testament, I would say it was lawlessness. In the Old Testament, depravity, guilt even. So anyway, let's go with depravity of his desires was I wroth, and I smote him. I hid me and was wroth, and he went on frowardly in the way of his heart. And then we have verse 18, "I have seen his ways and will heal him. I will lead him also and restore comforts unto him and to his mourners." And so I don't know to what extent we can understand more deeply what God is doing with man. But there almost seems to be the suggestion there that it's not just a simple equation of if you do bad, you get punishment. It's equality kind of thing, right? You do this, you get that. But there's also God's action, which says he's not changing. In spite of the punishment, he's not changing. Man is not. I have seen his ways and will heal him. So it suggests a different approach of God working beyond just the raw reap what you sow point of view to a reaching out to us to transform us.
Keith, I think along those same lines, as you're reading these, I think about this is who Jesus is.
Mm-hmm.
It's such a contrast to the Jewish leadership, especially when you think about in the 9th chapter of John, where the blind man is healed, and he's questioned by the religious leaders, and they don't like what he says.
Mm-hmm.
It's very truthful. And so they say he's a sinner since murder.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, that is human nature, to put people in a box and not let them escape. It's not the nature of God.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus was very willing to forgive and give you life and heal people. And he quoted Isaiah.
Mm-hmm.
And it just makes me wonder, as I go back and read the New Testament, the Gospels, I'll be looking for those quotes out of Isaiah,
mm-hmm.
which he was bringing alive in his life,
mm-hmm.
people, and giving them hope, and calling the Jews at the time to the message of Isaiah that they actually lived out.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely a human, because we have trouble forgiving, we kind of place that on God. And so how many times do you hear people, or have you yourself just been like, wow, but I've done really bad things, or this is,
mm-hmm.
do all these righteous things to kind of make up for. And I know theologically it would break down, but I think Dallas Willard was the one that I heard say this, that it's kind of a load off of God's mind to forgive you. So obviously not that God has loads on his mind. Who knows how that works, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the spirit or the attitude of this is not, he's not keeping score and kind of this is a big deal to him to forgive your sins. He wants to do it.
Mm-hmm.
It's us that makes it a big deal.
And quite often, you know, that is the big issue. Can you forgive yourself?
Right.
The problem is, you know, every time we pass a location on earth where we have done something really bad, it comes to our mind. I remember what happened here, right? Or certain people, I remember what happened with that person. And if you truly have changed, you wish you could erase that in fact. And it takes a serious effort of trust to embrace the truth that God has erased it. And I should live in that reality. But, you know, look what it does. It causes us to deny how we feel. Even in forgiveness, God is calling us, and to accept his forgiveness calls us to move beyond the flesh and deny the temptation to languish in the agony of that past defeat.
You said deny how we feel, and that tripped me there.
Okay.
What you meant was reject the feelings. Don't
sure.
follow the feelings.
Sure. Deny the truth of it. Because how I feel is that I'm in remorse. I'm in agony over what I've done, and I can't get beyond it. At the end of the day, I'm not a valuable person because I have this on my record. How can I get rid of it?
And at the end of the day, that was like a major wake up for me when I realized, oh, I'm still doing it. I'm still playing God.
Mm-hmm.
I will be forgiven when I decide that what I've done is
atoned for,
and it's like, oh, whoa, I'm still walking in the path of being in charge, and part of the trust or the surrendered life is also surrendering to the fact that I don't get why God wants to forgive us so, quote unquote, easily,
mm-hmm.
although his, you know, the sacrifice of his life wasn't easy, but You know what I'm saying? It's the, wow, we can find a million ways to play God, can't we? And you can almost feel righteous about, well, I just feel so guilty for what I've done. And it's like, but you're still in charge when you're feeling guilty for what you've done. So it's a complete surrender of even that.
You're still humbled by what you've done.
Yes, absolutely.
But
it's not light, but it also is just a releasing.
Service.
Human nature is interesting because we should feel ashamed in the desiring something that's wrong. You say, oh, don't want to go there. That's awful. It's a nightmare. And yet, human nature is to follow natural desires. And then, when somebody comes to Jesus, they feel the weight, the shame of it. Like you're saying, we have to let it go. Jeremy's facing that now. He feels really bad about his past. And part of it feels like he's let people down with all that's coming down on him right now. This is good for me to hear this, to encourage you.
I do think it's important to encourage each other that we've all been, Jeremy's no different than you.
I agree with you.
And I do realize the understanding of maybe something that I've done may have had more of an effect. And, you know, we all have different, you know, how we've affected others for the wrong choices that we've chosen. But we were away from God. So,
what do you expect?
Right. And I just would like to just remind ourselves to just encourage each other in that. We don't have to be there anymore. God's not there when he sees any of us. He doesn't see that anymore. Even though we may remember and we have consequences for it.
But it's interesting how some of these deep human issues come out in Isaiah, how they're expressed there. It's just a truly remarkable book.
It is, because we have a history of thousands of years to draw on, and in our present culture, we have so many people to listen to and read after, and lives have been enriched. We can learn from the mistakes of others and the good from others. Back then, they didn't have that rich history of writing and sharing that we could do.
It's also helpful, you know, throughout Isaiah over and over again for me to just see, wait a minute, God was making the message clear already. It's not the Old Testament. He's just concerned with judgment. And then the New Testament comes and he's different.
Yep. He's grace and mercy, right?
Right. He had to teach it. We were still in the early stage, and so he had to present it overall a little different, just like, you know, with young children, you present information and here, memorize this and learn these, and then they get older, you get to get into the details of it and explain the nuances, and but it was all there to start with.
Yes, it seems that Isaiah reveals to us so much of the heart of God. You know, when you talk about prophecy, we tend to go to, okay, what's going to happen? I want to read Isaiah because I want to know what's going to happen. Well, no, you read Isaiah to know what God is like and what you are like. Okay, well, we've got 5 minutes left, and I only have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. About 20 references in Isaiah. But what I probably will do is I'm going to maybe make a little sheet up of some of these outstanding references and just hand them out to you so that if you'd like to kind of look at them on your own, you can.
So we can get started on Revelation.
So we can get started on Revelation and find out what's really going to happen.
Since you already have the document, when you do that, can we also have the Messiah reference?
Yes, I'll do that. Sure will. And so I found that tabulation, by the way, interestingly, from a page that's associated with the Mormon Tabernacle Choir. So the Mormons compiled that for me. Well, we've got just a few minutes left, so let me just start on my list here. I have Isaiah 35, verses 8 through 10, listed as a notable passage. Don't remember off my top of my head what that was, but it looks like it goes like this. Talking about the redemption of Zion. And a highway shall be there, and a way, and it shall be called the way of holiness. The unclean shall not pass over it, but it shall be for those, the wayfaring men, though fools, shall not err therein. No lion shall be there, nor any ravenous beast shall go up thereon. It shall not be found there, but the redeemed shall walk there. And the ransomed of the Lord shall return and come to Zion with songs and everlasting joy upon their heads. They shall obtain gladness and joy, and sorrow and sighing shall flee away. So another passage that has been turned into song by somebody along the way. And quite frankly, if you were to pick one chapter out of Isaiah, which is, well, there's two that kind of hold equal status, Isaiah 40 and Isaiah 53 are probably some of the most quoted. Isaiah 40 is just absolutely packed full. And besides the ones that we have noted, I have here verses 12 through 18 as being outstanding. Isaiah says, "Who hath measured the waters in the hollow of his hand, and meted out heaven with a span, and comprehended the dust of the earth in a measure, and weighed the mountains in scales, and hills in a balance?" Boy, doesn't that give you a sense of perspective. "Who hath directed the Spirit of the Lord, or being his counselor, hath taught him? With whom took he counsel, and who instructed him, and taught him in the path of judgment, and taught him knowledge, and showed to him the way of understanding? Behold, the nations are as a drop of a bucket, and are counted as the small dust of the balance. Behold, he taketh up the isles as a very little thing, and Lebanon is not sufficient to burn." Okay, so Lebanon was known for its great cedars in particular. "Nor the beast thereof sufficient for a burnt offering. All nations before him are as nothing. They are counted to him less than nothing and vanity. To whom then will you liken God? Or what likeness will you compare unto him?" So, incredible stuff. And like I say, I will compile a list here. And I think that we've spent a lot of time in what we call Old Testament books and realize that actually there's nothing all that old about it. But I don't like to spend too much time away from the Gospels, and so I would like to begin to study the Gospel of Luke with you for a change of pace. We've done Matthew, Mark, and John most recently, and so if there are no objections, I will be prepared to talk about the first chapter in Luke next week. Thank you for your kind attention.
A story filled with grace.